It's good to be back on American soil, and several have asked if I got over my jet lag, and I told them that this was Tuesday, wasn't it? I think it's just kind of a haze, but I think I'm awake, and so if I start rambling and we get into the Book of Romans, just nod, and that's what they seem to do over in India. So actually, it was these classes that I taught over there. It's the first four chapters of John, so it was good for to spend the time in the Book of John and review the purpose of his writing. And again, we spent a whole class on this. The purpose of the writing is that you may believe. And again, we went and we emphasized that at the time that John wrote this book, at the time in which he wrote it, if it actually was at the end of his life, three other Gospels existed. And he was writing to an audience of baptized believers. And so if you make that application in our life, that we need to hear the story of Jesus. You know, he was writing to an audience that needs strengthening. And so he took a completely different look at it, a different aspect. And he wrote the story of Jesus in such a way that you should come away with it to say, he is who he said he was. God will do what he said he'll do. And we'll talk about the other harmony of the Gospels and where John fits into this. And if you don't have a harmony of the Gospels, or at least a chart, some of them have in the back of the book of your Bible, it's real interesting at this point of what John omits and gets right to where he is. The first chapter, of course, he talked about John the Baptist and some of the first followers. His first miracle is in chapter 2 when he turned the water to wine, and the beginning of his ministry, where it begins, in cleansing the temple. The discussions with Nicodemus, one of the leaders of the law. Another point that we made about that is sometimes we're so excited when we're able to get a prominent leader in a different religion to obey. Boy, he can really make some influence. And some of the preachers that we talked to in India, you know, we sat down with some 90 preachers and talked to them about their work. And there's a couple of them up in the Northeast said that, well, my dad was a Baptist preacher and he was converted last year. And you'd think, well, with somebody in that big of a congregation, about 200 people, had that much influence, he's the only one that was converted and all of that. So, again, you can see how the gospel reaches the hearts individually. It doesn't matter who you are, who your parents are. Either way, whether they're strong Christians and very well known through the brotherhood, or if your parents are, as the British would say, hooligans, and you know, are not worth a lot. Talked about the Samaritan woman and the nobleman's son. And again, the point that we keep stressing is going back to the theme that he wrote this in such a manner that you would believe. And we'll see a couple of instances today. The healing of the lame man, chapter 5. I mean, chapter 7 here, we're getting right back to that event of what happened. So Jesus goes into Jerusalem. And while he's there, he heals this man that couldn't get to the pool in time to be healed. And we talked about how possibly, if you let me speculate, that he walks and sees the most pathetic person in the whole area that really has no hope at all. And so Jesus comes and asks him, do you want to be made well? And he said, yes. And he said, well, rise up and walk. And he did. And so, again, the point that we make there is that all of us are can be able to be made well. And of course, there's a spiritual application that he made later on in the temple. Feeding of the multitude, both physically and spiritually. And again, appreciate Mark and Ron's their study and their preparation and the discussion that was made. I couldn't hear all the discussion. Somehow we need to put mics on all the, or we can walk around like Phil Donahue maybe and let everybody make comments. But it was a good discussion, and a lot of the points brought out was that, you know, Jesus does these miracles for a spiritual understanding. And you see them just show up, and you can see breadcrumbs still on their beards, and fish breath. And they're coming to him and talking to him. And he said, well, you're coming to me because you want more food. And he starts making the application that he is the one that they need to be fed on. and so, great applications. This chapter, chapter 7, we're going to stop at verse 24. And it may seem to be a strange place to stop. I'm using Brother L.A. Mott's series and how he breaks it out. And so the discussion actually went all the way through verse 37, I believe, with some of this. But the point that you have here is just the conflict between Jesus and the Jews are just getting more and more and more. It's just stronger and stronger. And one commentator wrote, and I think it's right, that the other Gospels, even though there is a conflict between Jesus and the Jewish leaders, it's not as prominent and as aggressive as John writes it. John just puts this dialogue in there to where the Jews absolutely hate him. They absolutely cannot stand Jesus. And it really comes out in this dialogue. And so here is John that's writing this, and Jesus is just going headlong into Jerusalem again, and then he fulfills the purpose of his father. And again, so different than the way we would do it. And his brother's comments at the very beginning show that if you were a man and wanted to create a following, you would do it so much different than the way God attracts followers. So we broke it up into Jesus saying, my time has not yet come, and we'll talk about that. I think it's a stronger meaning than just, I don't want to go to Jerusalem yet. The Jews sought to kill him. And then the last part, it is a question of his authority. Here's Jerusalem again, and we'll talk about that. We'll have another area of the map later on. Well, these are the verses. So, Eric, do you want to read verses 1 through 5? Actually, we're going to read verses 1 through 10. 1 through 10. I'll try to keep up with you here.
After these things, Jesus walked in Galilee, for he would not walk in Jewry, because the Jews sought to kill him. Now the Jews' feast of tabernacles was at hand. His brethren therefore said unto him, depart hence, and go into Judea, that thy disciples also may see the work that thou doest. There is no man that doeth anything in secret, and he himself seeketh to be known openly. Thou do these things, show thyself, for neither did his first brethren believe in him. And Jesus said unto them, my time is not yet come, but your time is always ready. The world cannot hate you, but me it hateth, because I testify of it, that the works thereof are evil. Go ye up into this feast. I go not up yet unto this feast, for my time is not yet full come. When he said these words, he abode still in Galilee. But when his brethren were gone up, then went he also up into the feast, not openly, but as it were in secret.
Okay, before we get into these, the discussion of the feast, I'll just go over to this chart. We used this chart in one of our previous studies. The harmony of the Gospels, it's hard if you get A.T. Robertson's, it's a book, and you kind of glance through it. But if you have something that's an overview, and you can see, and if you haven't been familiar with it, it has the four Gospels here, and then all the events, and you can often see through these studies. But Matthew, Mark, and Luke are just following kind of a chronological order here, and John's out here by itself. But what you see here, this feast that Jesus is about to go to, he's heading down to this the Feast of Tabernacles. We're within 6 months of Jesus being crucified. So it's chapter 7, and so you can see that what John does is he completely omits the Judean ministry. There's so much ministry. There's so much that happens, and a lot of the miracles and the teaching that Jesus does in Galilee, it's omitted. I mean, we're within 6 months of him coming back into Jerusalem and for his last week. So, again, John's timeline is not written chronologically. It's written that you may believe. So he includes a lot of things here that others have not. So, very interesting. The Jewish feast in the Gospel of John, we showed this last time. This is the only gospel that shows three different Passovers, and in chapter 2, chapter 6, and chapter 11. So we're in chapter 7. The Feast of Tabernacles is about 6 months. It's about halfway between the two Passovers. And so the Passover in John 11 is when Jesus comes back into Jerusalem for this time. Two other feasts that are mentioned are the Feast of Dedication in chapter 10, and then the one that we're talking about now is the Feast of Tabernacles. In chapter 5, we mentioned at the bottom, it mentions that there's a feast that he mentions in chapter 5, verse 1. But we don't know where that feast is. There's a lot of speculation. But it seemed that Jesus went by himself and not the other. The apostles were not with him. Deuteronomy 16 does talk about three times a year that the males shall appear back before the Lord. Feast of the Unleavened Bread, which is the Passover, the Feast of Weeks, and the Feast of Tabernacles. So we're going to talk about the Feast of Tabernacles. In Leviticus 23, it mentions that Jesus said that you shall dwell in booths for 7 days. All who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I have the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought you out of the land of Egypt. It makes a transition from this nomadic poverty to a stable influence that coming into their new land. And so Edersheim writes that the most joyous of all festive seasons in Israel was that of the Feast of Tabernacles. It fell on a time of year when the hearts of the people would naturally be full of thankfulness, gladness, and expectancy. All of the crops had been long stored, and now all fruits were also gathered and vintage passed, and the land only awaited the softening and refreshing of the latter rain to prepare for a new crop. He also mentions that three things specially mark the feast: its joyous festivals, the dwelling in booths, and the peculiar sacrifices during that week. And again, a picture that's depicting up there as the children of Israel went in these booths, or they actually dwelt in tents for these 40 years. And so if you do some study, we don't have a lot of time to look at it. All the families were told to go build it themselves. And so they would build it, and actually the Jews still do this today. But they build these booths, and they live in them for, I think it's a 7-day feast. But the point is this is a joyous occasion. This is a time to where Jesus does some of his teaching. And we mentioned before that Jesus doesn't just say, I want to talk about shepherds. I am the great shepherd. There's opportunities there that arose that he sees that people are interested in what's going on around them. And he said, I am the good shepherd. He makes an application to them then. The woman at the well. He didn't just say, I want to change the subject. You want living water. What he did is he made an application of what was going there. He's going and getting some water because he was thirsty. And this discussion turned into, do you want to have water and be able to drink of a water that where it'll always quench your thirst? And so he said, I am the living water. So what Jesus does here, and we'll see next week in chapter 7, he makes some great application of the feeding that he's able to give. And if you put that in the context of the Feast of the Tabernacles, it makes it very, very powerful. So again, the applications that we can see Jesus, he is the only way, he is the truth, he is the light. All these applications that he's making of himself are focused around the situation that he was in. Any comments up to this point on the Feast of Tabernacles? Okay, so why did Jesus' brothers urge him to do, and what was his explanation in verse 5? Yeah. Yeah. You know, if you were, it said in verse 5, and what does it say in verse 5? It said they didn't believe. Now, it doesn't say that he didn't believe that he did miracles, because that's what they're saying is go there and do these signs. You want a following? I mean, do you really want to do this? Then get to Jerusalem, go to the headquarters. You have the biggest following that we have. It's a time in which people are open and they're excited, and you can go. What a great time to go ahead and start your ministry. The followers would just be coming out of the woodwork. And then it says in verse 5, but they didn't believe who he was. It says they didn't believe. I believe that what he's saying is they didn't believe that he was the Messiah. Again, allowing me to paraphrase a little bit. Why are you still in Galilee up here? Go to the capital and show everyone who you are. Show yourself to the world, it says in verse 4. Thinking from an earthly viewpoint, Harkrider says, they reasoned that if he wanted recognition, he needed to go to Jerusalem and work miracles before the crowds. Do you want a following? Do you really want to do this? It is so primed. It is so ready for you to get out and to start this ministry. You're going to have millions of followers. And Jesus said, that's not the kind of followers I want. What it really is the way of manifesting His Son's glory is through the cross, 6 months away. And you know, God's ways are not our ways. And sometimes we think, you know, it would to be really efficient. If you really want to spread the gospel efficiently, forget about the autonomy of the church. Forget about all these things that we can do, because we can get to people very efficiently. If you have no authority to do that, then what you're saying is, God, I know a lot better than you do, because I have 30 years of experience of preaching overseas. I was able to be able to do this and put a sponsoring church arrangement together. I mean, it's just an example that I'm throwing out there. But sometimes we don't allow God to teach the people that He wants us to teach. So what Jesus said is, okay, well, I'm going to come in secretly. I know what you're saying is, go in openly. Let's make a big fanfare about this. Let me get in there. People know who I am at this point. They're going to be waiting for Him. He caused such a stir when he was in there the last two times. He cleansed the temple, and then he goes and heals this man on the Sabbath day. And so they said, the time is right. Jesus said, no, I want to teach the people that I want to teach. I want to teach the hearts that are looking for truth. And usually that's not the multitude. That's not the majority. Reminds us of chapter 6 in verse 15. I think Mark covered this. You know, they were looking for him after he fed the multitudes, and they wanted to make him king. And that's what we want to do. We want to take something and to say, you know, let's do grand things for God. And what Jesus did is he just departed and spent time alone during that time. Okay. Comments? What is the reason that Jesus states that the world hates him? Why do they hate him? Oh, let me back up. It's interesting. I had a note here. When Jesus talked to his mother and she said, you know, there is no wine. And he wasn't being disrespectful, but he talked about his time was not there yet. And so Jesus answers in the same way. And it's not that he's being disrespectful. And I don't think his brothers were being disrespectful to him. I think they don't understand who he is and how he's operating. And so Jesus answers in the same way he did his mother. He just said, my time's not there yet. So we can go on, and we'll see that in the next question. Okay, so what was the reason that Jesus states that the world would hate him? Yeah, nobody likes that. I really like this guy because he comes in and tells me and exposes all my faults. Let's have him over for dinner. You know, it's just really nice. Well, those are the kind of people we need to be around. That's what's so important of being with the church. That's what's so important of being with spiritually minded people. To help admonish. I think, I'll tell this again, I think all of you know Therese Mano's definition of admonish. Sheila came up to me at work one time and she said that I think Rod was studying Hebrews 10 and verse 25 about we need to not forsake the assembling because we need this admonishment from everyone. And Sheila came and asked, if you don't mind me giving this example, but she asked Therese, what does admonish mean? I mean, you can look in the Greek dictionary, you can look all this, but I think Therese had the best definition. She goes, it means... And I think that it stuck with me. And but anyway, but that's why Jesus comes and exposes the sins. And what he does is he tells them that, you know, he's testifying against them. Barnes writes, and he said, "Of course you can go. You can go freely. You can do anything you want. Because the world didn't hate you. Actually, you're going on the flow of the world. You're right in line with them. You can come and go as you want. I can't." Jesus is the main cause of opposition. He's an alien. He antagonizes. That's what they saw him as. You can see the Jews, especially that third Passover. You know, he's still coming. And you're going, well, this Jesus is coming again. And you can see the Jewish leaders huddling together trying to figure out, how are we going to get him? And of course, the last time he came in, on a donkey. And there's no way the Jews could stop that as they were heralding him as he came in. Those of the world, even Jesus' followers, think and live as part of the world. These brothers could come and go as they please without the Jewish leaders threatening. It's interesting, though, is Jesus is known as one that was that causes so much conflict. But he says in John 3:17, he didn't come to condemn the world. He just exposed their sins. You know, when your children get in trouble and you talk to them, they shouldn't be mad at you. All you're doing is, isn't this what I told you I would do? You know, when you come in and you show them the agreement that you had or the responsibility they have, it's not you that caused the problem. It's them. And so Jesus just teaches the truth. We talked about that as this perfect light came and exposed, you know, absolute darkness. If you allow yourself to come to the light, you're going to be so deficient. And so if you allow yourself to be exposed and humble yourself and let the teaching mold you and you follow, that's the followers Jesus wants. And so he said, yeah, the reason why they hate me is because I tell them the truth. And I expose their sin. Questions or comments here? Okay, what do you mean that the time has not yet come? That's absolutely right. Some of the commentators on this verse said, you know, this isn't the hour that he does later on, but I think it is. I think everything Jesus does is looking for this purpose. Just as Wade said, it is that. It's not the same word as it says, my hour is coming. And it's not that, but it is all that's on his mind. All is on his mind is not, oh, I want to get there about Tuesday into the feast because that's when, you know, you get the best seats. No, that's not what he's doing. His timing is all about his purpose. And his brothers didn't understand that, you know. And again, it go back to that you may believe, you know, his brothers didn't believe at this point. Maybe come a time to when they do. But they didn't believe at this point. And if this is the same James and Jude, then they certainly were believers at the end. His brothers could come and go as they want. They were not hated. Although language is not exactly as his later comments, I believe Jesus was still referring to a higher event. He was correct in stating that he cannot freely come into Jerusalem without being mobbed, but I believe he is reiterating that God is in control. It is so interesting that last week, and they got him. I mean, the way that they got him, they got together and let's get one of his own, Judas, the treasurer. They got him and they schemed. God is in control. His time was not yet come. So man has devised his way, 30 pieces of silver. So where is he going to be? I'll show you. Let's go at night. I'm the person I kiss. Judas says, that's him. So they got him. And boy, you can see they ran through this trial real fast. How proud they were they got him. They trapped him. No, it was all part of his plan. The next section, 11 through 13, you can see here that Jesus comes later to the feast. Is that in the other verses? I'm trying to see at the end in verse 10. No, he said he's going to come in secretly, and then you see him show up later on. But evidently, the feast had started. And so the Jews sought him out at the feast. Where is he? You know, his brothers were right. If you really want to create a human following, all he had to do was walk there, throw a couple of miracles around, you know, say things against the Jewish leaders. Boy, that was good. People that don't like the authority and understand it and recognize the corruption love to have somebody expose that. He could have had a following with millions of people. That's not what he did. So they're looking for him. But possibly because he wasn't there, there's a lot of discussion about him, quietly. But they discussed, you know, some said he's good. Others say, no, he deceives the people. But they didn't speak out because they feared the Jews. So that's the question and the application here. Jewish pilgrims from all parts of the world came and ascended to Jerusalem. He was expected to be at the feast, but he waited to be halfway through to really come out and to teach. Quiet conversations about him, pros and cons weighed. You can see the discussion about Jesus. I mean, later on in this chapter, when they go to arrest him, the Jewish leaders come back and the Jewish guards come back. They were supposed to arrest Jesus. And, of course, the Jewish leader said, where is he? And he goes, there's nobody. Nobody has taught like this man. I mean, the impact that he had. Discussions were not discussed openly for fear of the Jewish leaders. John chapter 9 is the story of the blind man. And his parents, when they called him, said, you know, who healed your son? Well, go ask him. You know, he's old enough to do it. And they didn't stand up for his son because they knew that they'd be thrown out of the temple. It is interesting that everybody's afraid of everybody. Jesus comes up at his last week and throws all the money changers out of the temple again as he puts an exclamation point at the end of his ministry. And they come up to Jesus and they said, by what authority do you do these things? And he said, well, I'll ask you a question. The baptism of John, was it from heaven or men? So the Jewish leaders got together and it said that they didn't want to answer and say it was that John's baptism was of John, because they feared the people. You know, the application here is we need to stand up and speak the truth. There's nobody in your job. There's nothing that anybody can do to you spiritually. And that's what matters. Now, it doesn't mean create a scene. But sometimes we are in a situation that will not create a scene. And we don't stand up for truth or stand up for those and back those up of those that are standing for truth. Comments? Okay. Get someone to read verses 14 through 24, if that could. You want to do it, Tim?
About the middle of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and taught. And the Jews marveled, saying, how does this man know these letters, having never studied? Jesus answered them and said, "My doctrine is not mine, but I can be sent. If anyone wills to do his will, he shall know concerning the doctrine, whether it is from God or whether I speak of my own glory. He who speaks from himself speaks from my own glory, but he who seeks the glory of the one who sent him is true, and no unrighteousness is in him. Did not Moses give you the law, yet none of you speak the law? Why do you seek to kill me?" The people answered and said, "You have a demon who is seeking to kill you." Jesus answered and said to them, "I did one work and all marvel. Moses therefore gave you circumcision, not that it is from Moses, but from the Father. And you circumcise a man on the Sabbath. If a man receives circumcision on the Sabbath, so that the law of Moses is not broken, are you angry with me because I made a man completely well on the Sabbath? Do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous works."
Okay. Isn't interesting? In verse 16, in verse 17, it says, Jesus is talking. He said, "Anyone who wills to do his will shall know concerning the doctrine." He didn't say anybody that does his will just happened to do it. There's an intention here and a purpose that you say, "I'm going to do God's will." Not just when it's convenient to us. Not just, "I just happen to have nothing to do on Sunday. And so I'm able to fit my schedule in there, or I want to grow spiritually, and so this is what I want to do," and you force yourself to learn to do God's will. You know, this is more pointed. Anybody that wants to follow Jesus and really, really, really wants to get to heaven will be there. If you really want to be there, you're going to get there. Unfortunately, there's too many things in this life that cover us over. And we are so many things that get in our way that we allow get in our way. And we just flat cannot work God into our busy schedule. We are really busy people. And we just may not have time to get to heaven. We may just not be able to get that into our schedule. But just let everybody realize that. And then it's interesting in verse 20. When Jesus said, first in verse 19, "Did not Moses give you the law, yet none of you keep the law? Why do you seek to kill me?" Whoa, that's a revelation to the multitude there. Now the Jewish leaders, back in chapter 5, it said from this point on, they sought to kill him. Do you remember the 2 points of what they were wanting to kill him about? 2 points. They said from this point on, here's the 2 reasons. Anybody remember? Healing on the Sabbath day and blasphemy. That he said that he was equal with God. The Jews recognize that. Some of our religious groups do not say. He said he never said that. Well, Jews knew exactly what he was saying. And so it said that from that point on, they said that they sought to kill him. So here's the multitude. And so they're saying, "You're a demon. Nobody wants to kill you." Jesus said, "Yeah, they... it's the Jewish mob." So what he does is he really goes to the heart of their accusations and directed and exposed their true intention. You have a comment or a question?
I'm just curious, when you... yeah.
Well, the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they don't think that Jesus was actually God, and so. But Jesus did claim that he was. All right. Let's move on to the questions. Here's another picture of the temple here. Well, we don't have time to go into it. The colonnade over in this part of the area, if this is actually facing north this way, or this is north up here, then this is where a lot of the commentators feel like the discussions were. Why did the Jews marvel when Jesus spoke? And what did this mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. happened to the apostles too? Are these not Galileans? Are these not a bunch of people from Arkansas? Sorry. Bavaria. I'll do it. I'm back in Germany. Are these just people from Bavaria? Yeah. Oklahoma, I'll say that. I'm from Oklahoma. So, I mean, are these not people from Galilee? How do they know anything? And in some ways what they're doing is they are trying to discredit Jesus. I mean, when he was 12, his knowledge was astounding to them. And his ability to walk through the Scriptures. I can't imagine they didn't realize that. And they couldn't, trying to put all this together. But I think this was the point that what they were trying to do in front of everyone is discredit Jesus. The letters that it's talking about, that letter, that Greek word actually means grandma. So you can kind of see what the where we get some of our sentence structure. I guess the wording for that. But it's a learned literature taught under the schools of the rabbis. And schools of rabbis derived authority from the fact of its accordance to tradition. And so, and if you have a great teacher that's teaching. Now, he was taught and descendants down through and being taught through Moses, and Moses actually got it from God. So that they have this lineage of where this great wisdom came from. The problem is it's so riddled with tradition. And Jesus states once again that he received authority in his actions from the same source that Moses did. I'm getting it from my father. I have authority to speak from God. So they're questioning his authority. The Apostle Paul, when he's in Acts, the 22nd chapter, in front of an angry mob of Jews, trying to show his credentials. He later on does that, I think, also in Philippians 3, that he shows concerning the law as a Pharisee. But here in Acts, the 22nd chapter, he said, I am indeed a Jew, born of Tarsus in Cilicia, brought up in this city at the feet of Gamaliel. I was taught those letters. I have the credentials. So here you can see that what they're doing is they're questioning Jesus' credentials, even though he was the Word. He was God in the flesh. 1 Corinthians, in chapter 2, verse 2, the Apostle Paul that knew the law so well, he said, I determined not to know anything among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. How did Jesus explain that the Jews were judging themselves according to their superficial stipulations of the Sabbath when they were judging His actions? So how was the hypocrisy? Which was? Yeah, and we talked about this 3 weeks ago when they came to him at first and said, why did you heal on the Sabbath day? This is the same incident that he's talking about back when he healed this lame man. So Jesus said, okay, so, and again, if you'll allow me to speculate a little bit and put it in some Oklahoma English here. So let me get this straight. I understand the purpose of the Sabbath and the importance that it has for us and recognition of what we're supposed to do. But if you needed to circumcise your son because it was on the eighth day, you wouldn't have a problem with that. Nope, no problem. But if I wanted to make a man whole and a man well, you wouldn't think that that was a good thing. No, that's not good. And so what Jesus is trying to do is get them above their teaching, above their traditions, and go back to the law and the purpose of the law. Verse 24, do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. Here he's talking about, you're going to judge me. You need to judge me according to truth and not according to your own outcome. Do not twist the evidence to make the verdict come out the way you want it to. Judge it according to the law. In Deuteronomy 16, it talks about appointing these judges and don't give them bribes, because what it does is it just blinds the judges. You don't get true you don't get true judgment here, and it's all twisted because of that. So what Jesus does here is, again, is exposing their judgment. As we end each class, we go back to this issue, I mean, the theme of he's writing that you may believe. And again, what you've seen in this chapter so far is those that did not believe. Those that saw his miracle recognized who he was, but still did not believe. So as John's putting this story together, he's writing to an audience of Christians that need strengthening in their faith. And these are written that you may believe. We've entered the last 6 months of Jesus' life. He will aggressively challenge the hearts to clearly state who he was. When he's crucified, all should recognize that God in the flesh lived upon the earth. He is the Christ. He's the Messiah, the prophet and priest as prophesied. Many heard his claims and saw his wonders. John recorded these words and provided a spiritual and required these words to provide spiritual growth to those who already knew Jesus, those baptized believers, just like us today. So, when we don't work Jesus into our schedule, how can we be so callous to these stories? This doesn't apply to me. I was not the one that threw stones at Jesus. I was not the one that wanted to kill him. You know, it's not me. I mean, these verses are great stories that we can read and we can laugh at the Jews and how ignorant they were. No application to us, right? Wrong. When we take our responsibilities lightly and we place our worldly schedules ahead in front of anything that we do, anything, then what we're saying is, I don't believe you, God. I just don't believe you. And John, you certainly wrote a good book that's easy to read, but I just flat don't believe you. Next week, this is the story as Jesus continues on here in Jerusalem. And when they came back to arrest him, and of course, those that wanted to arrest him said no one ever spoke like this man. Comments or questions? All right. Thank you for your...